Hey, everybody. So welcome to the School of Life podcast. I'm here with my bestie and co-host, Amira David.
Hey, everybody.
So we find ourselves this evening in an extremely cozy bed in Ashland, Oregon.
And a few times a year, we go away for a weekend to primarily just rest. Yeah. Sometimes we catch up on life things that we didn't have time for. Sometimes we literally talk for like 12 hours a day. Sometimes we nap like we did today, which was glorious.
Eat a lot.
Or don't eat at all.
Or don't eat at all.
We stretch. We go outside every once in a while. But mostly we just sort of sit here and lay here and rest.
Yeah.
And it's become a precious time that we both really look forward to, that we do just a few times a year. And so here we are with zero preparation for this podcast. And we just decided that we were just going to invite you in to where we are right now, which is literally in a cloud of a bed with a lot of pillows. And a little lamp at 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. So welcome.
Here we are.
Yeah. So the reason for this and the reason for doing it technically unprepared is because the timing of our rest retreat, as we call it, has ended up landing in the exact week that both Amira and myself have had some sort of strange medical issues.
Developments.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we've been part of the use of this weekend has been just us personally, just talking together and sifting through basically our diagnosis or what
possible
we know,
diagnosis.
We know so far while talking through what we don't know yet and just kind of working out what that is for us, but in the context of applying our faith to sort of a situation for both of us that is unknown, I guess, basically is the best way to say it. There's some unknowns, but also potential seriousness to both of our situations. And so,
So we just thought it was really interesting timing that literally in the same week, we both had a very strange thing happen. And I don't think it's necessarily accidental in the way that it came about. Do we want to speak just briefly to what it is?
Yeah, that's fine. Do you want to?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. For me, a couple weeks ago, I have a history of cancer when I was 21 and I went through chemotherapy and surgeries, and the whole deal and recovered and never looked back and never thought about it much since then. You know, I was in college and kind of hit the ground running afterwards, being glad that it was behind me. And at that time it was a form of ovarian cancer. And just about 2 weeks ago, I had some neck pain and I discovered a sizable, swelling or lump above my collarbone, which happens to be, in people near over 40, a high likelihood of lymphoma. So, and people who have a history of chemotherapy have a much higher risk of developing lymphoma later in life. So all the signs, pointed to that possibility. I had some testing done and ultrasound and CAT scan, and all of it is inconclusive at this time. And, I have a biopsy next week, so hopefully that will tell us more. But, Jenna has had just an incredible amount of people praying for me, and people in my life have been doing the same. And A couple days ago, it got a little smaller, which is really hopeful. Yeah. So that's my strange thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then 2 weeks ago, I went to my doctor just to have him look at a mole that's on my stomach, just that I kind of appeared recently, and I wasn't quite sure about its shape and everything. In my family, I have a really extensive history of melanoma cancer on my mom's side of the family. All of my aunts, uncles, and my grandpa died from melanoma. And so anyway, you know, we're just kind of on guard about it, on top of it in my family. And I've had 5 other moles removed that were concerning in the same way. And so anyway, I just went for sort of a routine check. We ended up biopsying them, and it came back that they didn't clear it. It's actually stage 2 melanoma. And so this next week, the goal is another surgery to go in and try to clear it. But yeah, I think it's just kind of that thing of like, well, on one hand, we don't have any detrimental conclusive information yet. We also know that there's potential in both of these scenarios, and we know plenty of people who these exact scenarios have gone the opposite direction for and have not fared well. So we bring this up not for sympathy or for anything like that, but more like because it's actually been a really unique opportunity and actually an invitation to be really considering what those sorts of like instances basically do for us and like what it's drawn out for both Amira and myself. And so for whatever it's really worth to any of our listeners, we just wanted to invite you into that conversation because inevitably these sorts of things have a way of kind of forcing you to confront larger questions about your mortality and then questions about, whoa, yeah, what needs to change here? Or what would I want to do differently if I knew that there was something actually out of my control that, you know, was happening in my body? So, yeah.
Yeah. So I think we just wanted to talk about a little bit of how we have been in this process for the last week, really, for each of us, what it's brought up for us, and also look at it through a worldview lens, as we do on this podcast. Yeah. Because the truth is that, yes, while these two things are not at this juncture dire, and they may never be, but they may be, the truth is that horrible tragedies are happening all around us. We were just sitting on the couch earlier talking about many, many friends of ours from high school who died early deaths for really fluke reasons. And like a disproportionate number, it felt like. Yeah. And and that is always a possibility for any one of us, as we know. And it's hard to walk through life really holding that possibility in front of us at all times. However, when we lose someone we love or when we're given a diagnosis, it can be an opportunity for the world to get a lot clearer.
Yes.
And for our priorities to come into view and for an evaluation or an audit of how we're living.
Mm-hmm.
And if we knew that, you know, somehow our life was going to be cut short, we would take a really good hard look at how we're living and is this how we want it to be?
Yeah.
Would we feel okay? You know, not that it ever might feel okay to die, you know, but
yeah,
but it makes us take a look.
Yeah.
And also what illness and what tragedy brings up in addition it helps us really see what we're clinging to.
Yeah.
Or if there is nothing to cling to. And so there's a few different ways that we can respond to suffering or to hardship. I think suffering is one of those things, pain and suffering either pulls people or repels people away from God, or it makes people cling harder to God, I think. Or if you're in the camp or the worldview where there isn't a God, then the option is to, you know, just, I mean, how would you put that? Really, yeah. It's like you either try to accept it as this is just the way the world is, the way it is because of chance, because that's just how it is. Mm. And I guess if you can't accept it, then there's more suffering because of that. And ultimately, there isn't any purpose or meaning to the suffering in the end.
Yeah. And I would add to that oftentimes a lot of us, you know, run our lives at such a pace where it's not often until something like illness, tragedy, or just hardship happens to where we even, maybe even for the first time, have ask the question about God, like, whoa. Because, you know, you hear people talk about that all the time. It's like, it wasn't until this illness or this tragedy, and all of a sudden they started asking, where is God in this? And then the assumption's interesting. It's like, well, people search for meaning in those things. Like, it's almost like it's hard to escape the desire to try to make sense of what's happening, you know? And I think that that's actually beautiful and good, a good desire to try to understand the why and maybe if there's anything larger or more at play in the scenario.
Yeah. I think it's telling that most of us ask the question, why?
Yeah. Yeah.
That question itself indicates that there is a why, or that we hope there's a why. Mm-hmm. I think maybe at this point it might be helpful for us to just speak a little bit to our own process through this. For me, you know, when I first got the information from the ultrasound that it could potentially be metastatic disease, of course, you know, I have two little kids, I have, you know, a whole life, and my initial response was a rapid heart rate and tears, even though it wasn't conclusive, just that even that possibility caught me off guard. And there was a couple of nights where I didn't sleep much. There was this sort of buzzy feeling in my body. And, but what I found was I was laying there and not sleeping and realized, like, oh, this is time that I can just be praying. This is time that I can be spending with God. And I found that when I woke up in the morning, I didn't feel very tired. Like there was this sustenance that came through that time with him. And it was interesting, like in the subsequent days when, you know, the initial shock kind of wore off and I was feeling a little bit better and more hopeful, I found myself not praying as much as I was in those nights when I was really wrestling. And then I found that I missed that intimacy. I missed that time with God and that time to just like be real and open and honest and say like I'm scared and say all the things that were on my mind. In the most like vulnerable, intimate way. And it's interesting going through even just a health scare like this, feels so different this time around. Yes, there's fear, which I think is natural, but that fear for me feels different this time. It feels, it's like the waves on top of an ocean, but then there's this undercurrent of trust. And when I had cancer the first time, I was not a believer. So it just was very different. And yes, I was young and a little naive and knew deep down that I'd be okay. But there was a different kind of unknown in that this time around, there was this deeper peace when I found out that this could be something bad. One of my first thoughts after the initial fear was, okay, I'm really excited to see what happens through this. So which is really different. And yeah, even just that thought brought a very much so like deeper peace than I've had before. And when the waves of fear come, it can be, it's almost like I have this beautiful way that God is helping me give it back to him. It's like this back and forth. It's so like breathing.
Good. Yeah.
Like, okay, God, here's another fear wave. I'm going to give this to you now. And then he gives back some peace and it just kind of goes back and forth. But it's this, it's a very sweet, like closeness of breathing together or something.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. I like that imagery too. Yeah. For me, I think that, you know, if I'm just thinking through my initial reaction, kind of like a mirror where like my body started responding before my brain even caught up to it. It was like, I was in my pickup with my kids and had just gotten the phone call from my doctor. And there was this urgency of like, we got to get you in like right now, Wednesday, we're putting you on the books, like da da da. And there was like this, I don't think they meant to, but it was like, it was very clear that it had spread really quickly. And so there's like a timeliness. We have to now like get this out because of the rate of speed by which it's growing. And so as soon as they hung up the phone, like just looking at my kids, and I just started weeping without necessarily like intentionally processing any of it, because I'm just like, these people are the implication of this for me. Like these people who I'm so in love with, this is what I have to lose.
Yeah.
And so it's like, so just admittedly, there was like initial bodily response that was like some fear and also just like met with like almost in tandem this overwhelming sense of how much I love my kids. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it's strange because it's not like I was actually thinking to have that, like I wasn't trying to have that process, but it's like, it's just, it confronts, you know, these sorts of like something like that just confronts you on all of your things and it just simplifies. And so, yeah, I was kind of rattled at first. And then I think kind of like Amira said, you know, once you have some time to process a little bit, it's like, yeah, I mean, there's one of my absolute closest family members. This was the reason for his death and it was caught just a little bit too late. And so I know there's a timeliness to it, meaning my grandfather. And so like, I know it's possible to die from it, but I also know that it's possible to have it medically, you know, processed early enough to miss that. And so I think I started walking through just the practicality of it, but ultimately, and Amira and I ended up realizing that we had this in common, that while there's those peripheral considerations and implication, and you naturally consider the possibilities, you know, with those sorts of things, but like at a base level, I, you know, once the initial shock of it's kind of gone, it was like, okay, I actually do have a trust here that everything is going to be okay, but not necessarily okay in the like utopian okay, more like whatever comes, like whatever happens, I know that it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, and so it's just like almost like a intentional release of the illusion of control over it, of like, okay, come what may, I have a choice to make. I think that's kind of the clarifying effect, is like, there's only so many ways, like I guess Amira said too, like there's only so many ways that even makes sense to respond to something like that. And it's like you could go full panic and fear and sit in that by, I mean, intentionally or unintentionally. But then there's, or just passivity, you know, some people just in denial and that sort of thing. But then the other alternative is a deeply rooted trust and faith that no matter what comes, it is going to be all right. But all right in a, in an eternal sense.
A way bigger perspective.
A way bigger perspective. Yeah.
And that's the root of our hope. I think that's different, is that we aren't promised a life devoid of suffering. In fact, we're guaranteed a life with suffering. Jesus said, in this world, you will have trouble. You will. The word is will. But take heart, I have overcome the world. And like the world, that's a really big word. And so the hope is in an eternal future without suffering, but not in a present moment without suffering. And what's so compelling to me, and something that really keeps me believing in God actually continually, even when there's moments of doubt in the face of really extreme suffering and pain, like we see happening all over the world, that to me, a lot of it is just like, it's like true evil. And again, like being a therapist, the stories I hear, you know, are, you can't make them up. They're not things, you know, it's so dark. Is that, you know, these things are happening in the world no matter what. Whether we believe in God or don't believe in God, whether there is a God or isn't a God, these things are happening anyway. And without a God, they're happening and there's no healing and there's no redemption, there's no purpose, there's no meaning, there's no
justice.
Yeah, there's no ultimate healing. But with God, and I think some people feel like when they have infirmities or sufferings that they're being punished or God brought this upon them. But our understanding is that these things are not of God or made by God.
Or caused by God.
Him. Right? That he is good. That they're caused because of, you know, the outworkings of generational, you know, whether you want to call it sin or rebellion or...
Or the total collective curse that we understand was a result of the fall in the Garden of Eden.
And just like, and we know now that there is a way that trauma even is passed down generationally through the mitochondria and stuff. So there's actual like body memory of past trauma that's not even in your own life. So we know these things get passed down and they're just natural consequences, right? Through the generations. But with God, and particularly the God of the Bible, there is the ability for God to redeem these things and to use suffering for ultimate good. And just like, you know, the tragedy of Jesus on the cross, which is just a horrible, horrible picture, horrible thing that he did, but by choice, you know, it is a way that he's bringing us closer to him, in him, than we would have been had he not done that, had he not had to go through that suffering. So, I mean, that's just an example, like the ultimate example of redemption, right? But in our own lives, you know, there's a verse that says, all things work together for the good of those who believe. What is it? Who believe
in are called according to those, called according to
his purpose. Like the story of Joseph in the Old Testament, where his brothers were jealous of him and they sold him into slavery in Egypt. Well, they
tried to
kill him first, put him in a pit. Then he ended up going into slavery in Egypt, and he ended up saving all of Egypt from famine because of the dreams that he was able to interpret and the way he was able to help the Pharaoh. But in that, he said, you know, what you meant for evil, meaning his brothers, God meant for good. He was able to use it and turn it into a greater good than the evil was.
Yeah. So like God allowed it, didn't cause it, but allowed it, and then flipped the intention or the use of the suffering that was inflicted on Joseph actually for not only his good, but for the salvation and for the, I mean, meaning
survival,
for the survival of all of the Hebrew people.
Right. And
in Egypt during the famine. Yeah.
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 And so that's just one example of many, 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 many where there has been suffering that, you know, you can say was caused by evil or, you know, caused by generational trauma, whatever you want to call it. Right.
Yeah.
But then God is able to use it and turn it into something good. Anyway.
Yeah.
And that to me, you know, it's something that allows me to like continue to function in general in life, in my job, in the world, that is so, plagued by tragedy and suffering now and always has been. And for me, even in moments of doubt, I always come back to this. I always come back to, wait a second, like if I have lymphoma or I don't, I'm going to have it or I'm not, you know, whether God's in it or not, but I would rather God be in it.
Yeah.
And to believe that he can use it for something good. And when I hold on to that, I know it sounds like a little weird and twisted, but like I literally, there's almost like a joy in the possibility of having lymphoma because I know he will use it. And even if it's not that, he's already using this waiting time to have me closer to him, to remind my family and, you know, everybody around me of things that are important.
Yeah.
He's using it to crystallize our priorities. He's using it to help me look at how I'm living my life and find more areas where I can reduce stress and be more present with my family and more present with him, honestly.
Yeah.
So already in just this waiting where there's this mysterious little lump, there's already beautiful things
so much
coming,
yeah,
which is so merciful and so beautiful. Go ahead.
Well, the other thing I was going to say too is while that the idea of the potential of joy kind of bound up in even a like a grim looking diagnosis, right? So say it does come back, it's lymphoma, and we'll know by this weekend. But the potential and why that isn't actually like ludicrous, even though it sounds crazy. I think the at some point, and you and I are in roughly the same boat on this, is that as we have grown in our faith and then we have a few years under our belt in relationship to God, one of the things that is a continual demonstrative theme is that, and part of the reason why I think it's become easier for us to say, yeah, I trust you with this too, Lord. I trust you with this. I have faith in you in this, is because over time, the demonstration of his faithfulness and goodness to us to use difficult circumstances, of which you and I have both had many, but his ability to use those things, and then for us to be able to look back with 2020 and see like, oh, I see now how you used that thing that was so devastating at the time, that totally wrecked my anxiety at the time, that like wrecked me in that moment. But now I see the fruit that's come of it, or like the beauty that's come out of that. And I wouldn't change that for anything in the world. I think what that does is over time, it's that development of a real trusting relationship with our God, as opposed to a theoretical faith based on no demonstration of his goodness and faithfulness, but because we've seen the evidence. And I think that does make it just frankly easier to trust him with even really difficult scenarios. There's things that happened to me, especially I would say in the decade of my 20s, that if you were to have asked me even 5 years after, or 10 years after, I still wouldn't have yet had a glimpse of the breadth of the beauty or benefit to what it actually produced in my life. And it's only been in, you know, we'll say the last 5 or 10 years that then I'm looking back and I'm like, I see it now. Mm. I just see it totally differently. And I see why that was actually beauty from ashes, mm-hmm. like, you know, sort of thing. So anyway, I think that that's part of the heart posture and the disposition of faith that is possible. Mm-hmm. I think that's, it's a beautiful hope because it's possible when over time you've learned to trust him mm-hmm. with even the unknown and the discomfort. And frankly, I mean, I feel like God has been masterful at demonstrating his faithfulness against all odds. Like yeah. when the odds are completely, like when we're at our weakest, you know, the scripture's full, chock full of those examples and demonstration of like the things that we feel weakest in, God can use to strengthen us, but also to demonstrate his goodness and his mm-hmm. glory. And we want to ascribe to him the glory and the goodness in those things because he's worthy of that. And just ultimately like knowing over time, he has not failed us yet. There's still things that we pray for every day that are unanswered prayers, right? But it doesn't mean that he's not good. And just because those prayers aren't answered yet or something, for example, that that he won't continue to be faithful and maybe answer the prayers differently than we had thought or intended.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And what's so beautiful to me about this, I mean, I also want to just add in here that this doesn't mean that we don't have anxiety.
Yeah.
We still have fear. Sure. We still have anxiety. We still have worry. You know, we still have moments of panic. There's, we still have sorrow and grief. Yeah. All those things are very real. They're things, you know, we were given emotions for a very good reason. You know, they help us survive. They help show us what we need. But there is this really interesting phenomenon of joy being able to exist simultaneously.
Yeah.
Or peace or rest or trust existing simultaneously with anxiety or yeah. simultaneously with sorrow.
Yeah. In which, that tension.
In yeah. the tension, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is not, I think, a common experience or understanding in the world that those two things can coexist.
Yeah.
Even in Isaiah 53 in the Old Testament, written like 700 years before Jesus, it said when it was speaking about the Messiah, he's, you know, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, mm. right? But he's also the Son of God, like, right, whose goodness and beauty and light, but being acquainted with sorrow, being a man of grief, right? Suffering many things, taking our iniquities upon him by his stripes, meaning like he will be beaten and that, you know, then we're healed. So there's already that paradox existing within him himself. But oh, there was something I was going to say that was a little aside.
You're talking about earlier, you were talking about how we're still human, though. Still, we still
have all these feelings.
Yeah.
Right. There's something I wanted to add in there. Yeah. Oh, boy, I've lost it now.
It's okay.
That's how we know it's getting late.
It's okay. Yeah. One other thing I was going to say in terms of like processing of this. And I just want to like continue moving you guys along with us in this processing is that the next phase, if we were to divide the mental processing of this into phases, would be that, and I know Amir and I both shared this in common, was once we arrived at that place of a deeper, not just deep, but the deeper and let's say the deepest mm-hmm. place of trust, despite still our mm-hmm. felt sense of fear and, you know, just the natural things that come up with that. The next phase that her and I both went into, and not even on purpose, but just by default, and Amira alluded to it, but just like, okay, God, let's see what you're going to do with this. And I think that that hope is coupled with our knowledge that we have tools also beyond just hope and trust that we as believers know to employ in these situations, and that is prayer. Mm-hmm. We know that, like tonight, we spent significant time laying hands on each other, laying hands on the places that are in question on our bodies, and praying over them, and essentially just asking God to do what we can't do for ourselves there, mm-hmm. and to bring about healing, and but still submitting all of that to His timing and His will, whatever that looks like. But we've both been witness to genuine, miraculous healings. I know for sure I have, where there's an instance of someone having a thing in their body, like devastating diagnosis, having other believers lay hands on them and them being healed. And so I know that that opens up a whole different other, you know, can of theological worms. But on the other hand, and it's all throughout scripture, the laying on of hands and the prayers of the saints are effective. And so we know that there is tremendous kingdom power and potential that comes as a result of our prayers, and oftentimes only as a result of our prayers. Mm-hmm. So that is treatment, if you will, for how we are and how we are engaging this, is we are now committed, yeah, to praying over this for each other as, you know, friends, but then also over ourselves and then for our families, that it would just be used in all the different ways. And ultimately, we're asking Him to heal us. You know, it's like, that's, I just want to be really clear. We're asking for healing, but whether it's healing now or
a different kind of healing, or healing in our family as a result of it, yeah. You know, whatever it may be.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other reality here is that some people don't get healed, and yeah. some people die from these things who yeah. believe in God and,
you know, just and are trusting on the other side of heaven.
Yeah. Right. And yeah. then, you know, Jesus said to the man whose friends put him through the roof to heal him, who never walked,
the paralytic.
Yeah. He said to him, "First, your sins are forgiven." And then, to demonstrate that that was true, he told him to get up and walk, yeah. indicating that, like, the deeper malady was healed and the body was secondary.
So good.
So yeah. good. I remember now what
nice.
I was going to
nice.
Say. I was thinking about suffering in different worldviews, and not that we're experts on all the worldviews by any stretch of the imagination. However, it does seem to me different to be thinking about suffering as something that is expected, something that is useful or can be useful in our character formation, or in the patience and the hope and the, you know, the development of grit and resilience and all those things inside of us,
yeah.
or can be used for the good of others. Whether it's witnessing how we move through the suffering, or whether it's bringing perspective to them. However, suffering can be useful
mm-hmm.
and actually lead to more good. Whereas, for example, you know, as I understand it, like, and not to diss on other worldviews, but just to hold them up together and just take a look and go, okay, how do we think about suffering in these different ways? For example, like in Buddhism, as I understand it, the point is to end all suffering, which is good. And yes, ultimately we think of heaven as like the end of all suffering, the remaking of all things. But in Buddhism, the goal is to end all suffering here yeah. by detaching from, or that they say the root of suffering is our attachment to things,
yeah,
that then if we don't have those things, or those things go wrong or whatever, we have suffering. So to detach from those things theoretically would lead to less suffering.
Yeah.
Or in, you know, a more materialistic worldview, you know, suffering might be viewed as, well, okay, this is just something that's happening by chance in the world, and yeah. we have to either try to avoid it, or cover it with substances, or cover it with, you know, distraction or diversion, yeah. or deny it. Or, I mean, how else?
Well, in Hinduism, and again, this is not for the purpose of critique, it's just to hold it all up. So in cyclical, mm-hmm. like...
Mm-hmm. Reincarnation.
Yeah, I mean, so... if you understand, if that's the worldview, you would understand that suffering is a result of something you did in a different life. Yeah. And so then it puts all the pressure on your performance. So whatever present suffering, it's like you just have yourself to blame for whatever you did in a past life. And then
Which you can't remember.
And it still doesn't offer an objective, tangible, hope-filled perspective, at least from what I can see.
Because you don't know where you're going to go wrong in this life, which might lead to having to pay for that in a future life.
Yeah, because then it's such a pressure to even perform well in the midst of your present suffering so that you don't create more suffering for yourself in the next life. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of perspectives on I mean, even, you know, it's interesting because, and I know we've briefly touched on this, but, you know, in terms of worldview, the question even of, why is there suffering and why is there evil is definitely accounted for in the Christian worldview and is all over through the Bible. But I would say it's less of, like, we have an answer for that. It's less ours to answer, but it's actually, the question would be best suited and presented to, I would say, a more atheistic perspective. Like, what do you ascribe suffering and, you know, understanding evil as part of suffering? Like, what is the explanation for that? That's actually far harder to explain from that worldview. I know there's options out there and theories out there, but I'm just saying, you know, it's still, even if there's a solution or like a reason, it still doesn't give it meaning. That I think so. I think that's really different, and it changes the whole perspective, you know, on what you're going through, and to know that pain is real and that we don't have to write it off and we don't have to like make it nothing,
avoid it, or avoid it.
Yeah, or over explain it. It's just more like it is. It's just part of the human condition, and nobody's exempt. I think that's the other interesting thing of, like, you know, at some time, like, if you're generally, or you have been generally healthy, and then, you know, something like this happens, you're just confronted. Like, you have a different experience. You had a very, very serious cancer earlier in your life, but it just confronts you with, like, the reality of, like, I'm not invincible. Like, this is out of my control.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that I didn't do justice to talking or speaking to what the different worldviews would do with suffering or how we would cope with it or think about it, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that would take a lot more time to dig into and do them all justice, you know.
Yeah, totally.
And not to think of any of them as bad, but just like generally, like, if you are looking at the world through this lens, what do you do with suffering, right? And they all have a different answer for that. But it is relieving to have a source of meaning for it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Viktor Frankl, who was in Auschwitz and studied the people who survived versus the people who didn't, and the people who got through it were the ones who had meaning.
Yeah.
He wrote The Man's Search for Meaning.
Right? Yeah.
And there's even studies now being done about, like, the that one of the best, not cures for, but things that help anxiety is actually faith, which makes sense because anxiety is fear of what might happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And faith is, well, God's got it, basically, right?
Yeah.
Ultimately, in some ultimate way.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to worry about that future thing.
Yeah.
And I can stay just right here as best I can.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though our mind wants to wander into the future and do all the what ifs, which mine certainly did, you know.
Yeah.
Our minds are a little bit wily. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of, like, really the importance of the OG CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, and OG just means the original, which was, in the Bible it says, take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, which means, like, take a hold of your thoughts, bring them into, shine them in the light of truth, and see if they're true or not. And any anxiety actually isn't true because it's not actually happening. Yeah. And so the fear is true, but mm-hmm. the thoughts aren't, they're lies because they're not happening.
Mm-hmm.
And they may never happen.
Yeah.
And yet we're putting ourselves through that continuously now.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning is important. It's really important for our well-being and our mental health and for making it through the most unimaginably difficult situations, like even, you know, the Jewish people in internment camps.
Yeah.
The ones who got out and were okay were the ones who had meaning
yeah.
and made meaning out of the suffering.
Yeah.
And this isn't easy. This isn't something that we can just like materialize on our own necessarily. Yeah. I mean, I think we can to a certain extent for sure.
Yeah. It's curated. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it's like intentional.
Yeah. And it does take some work.
Yeah.
It takes taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. You know, it takes work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just think if there's anything else we want to touch on.
I guess I just want to say thanks for hanging out with us.
Are we the first podcast that's been created laying down?
We're literally laying down.
On our backs, just talking to the ceiling and you guys. It's totally cool.
I'm currently laying in the fetal position.
Yeah.
Late night.
But yeah, anyway, just, I mean, I think we're just hopeful that even just to a sliver of a degree that the processing of this alongside of us, because we've kind of brought you guys in, which was, I mean, it's a bit vulnerable for us to do that. But I mean, I hope you guys, you know, maybe that it's appreciated just from the sense of like, all of us have our versions of what Amira and I are grappling with this week. You know, we're no exception. Everybody has their version of the thing that calls for consideration of the bigger questions. And so it's a beautiful opportunity to do so. I mean, I think that I'm so appreciative of the purifying effect that these things have had, because if you guys are anything like me, it's just so easy to just get in the doing. And then sometimes these things force you to slow down enough to reevaluate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm grateful for that for right now. And then just leaving it with, it's in your hands, Lord, just trusting you, come what may. Yeah.
And a little bit of humor is always good.
Yeah, totally.
I named my bump Gertha.
Tonight I was like anointing it with oil and she was like, go ahead. I named it Gertha. And I was like, oh my gosh. So good. She's a feisty thing.
Anyway. Well, thank you for joining us on this little meandering journey tonight. Yeah. And may you all be well in whatever circumstance you're in right now. And may we all find deeper meaning in all of the challenges that we are inevitably facing, and deeper tenderness and kindness for each other, because we just don't know what we're all carrying around every day. Because everybody is. Everybody's carrying a weight of some kind, no matter who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, you guys, for joining us, and blessings on all of you. Yeah. Thanks.
Talk to you soon.